I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Dr. Katie Rickel, is a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in weight management and health behavior modification. Dr. Rickel earned her PhD in clinical psychology from the University of Florida. Following this, Dr. Rickel completed a clinical internship in healthy behavior, specializing in obesity at Duke University Medical Center, where she was trained in the management of chronic pain, behavioral weight loss, and surgical interventions for obesity. Dr. Rickel's research has been presented at numerous professional conferences and has been published in scientific journals and peer-reviewed publications. She has also been featured in the Dr. Oz Show and on local news and radio media, and has been quoted in Women's Health Magazine, Health Magazine, The Huffington Post, Yahoo Health, and CurvyGirlHealth.com. Dr. Rickel serves as a licensed clinical psychologist at Structure House, a residential weight loss facility in Durham, North Carolina, where she provides clinical services and develops novel programs. She has also written a self-guide, weight management workbook, Structured for Life, 28-Day Weight Loss Action Program, and has assisted the creation of an online version of the Structure House Treatment Program. More information is available at www.structurehouse.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Rickel, and I look forward to hearing about weight loss. Now, first, what factors have contributed to the dramatic rise in obesity rate in the United States over the last 40 years?
Well, I would say it would be three main factors. The first is that we live in what's been called an obesogenic society, a society that almost breeds obesity in terms of all of the high-fat, high-calorie foods that are around us and all of the sedentary activities we engage in. And it turns out that over the last particularly 30, 40 years or so, there's been a real rise in technology that have led us all to be more sedentary. We spend most of our time sitting. They call sitting the new smoking. And that really adds up over time to contribute to obesity. Mm-hmm. And the second factor has to do with our biology. And this, to understand why the human body actually prefers to hold on to fat, you have to go back in time to the days of the early humans, 200,000 years B.C., where the people living in those times were moving around all day, running away from things that might eat them or fall on them. Mm-hmm. So they were moving around, expending a lot of energy all day. And the kind of food that was available were fruits and vegetables and nuts and insects. So fat was a very scarce commodity. It was hard to come by. Mm-hmm. So when it did become available, it behooved people to eat as much of it as they could. And those people who were able to hold on to that fat in times of famine, who had the genes that were very good at holding on to fat, were the ones who could survive and pass their genes that were very good at holding on to fat onto their offspring, who passed them on to lucky us. Mm-hmm. So our biologies do not like to let us lose weight and leave it off. Mm-hmm. And the third factor that contributes to the rise in the obesity epidemic is our learning history with food. And everyone does this to some extent. We all associate certain foods with certain occasions and events and traditions. And because we pair foods with those situations so frequently, it becomes very hard to have one without the other. And that eventually leads us to eating for reasons that really have nothing at all to do with nutrition. Here at Structure House, where we coach people in losing weight and keeping it off for a lifetime, we look at what's called the relationship with food. And that refers to the ways that we use food that don't necessarily have to do with nutrition. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's those three factors, mm-hmm. the obesogenic mm-hmm. environment, our biologies and our learning histories that have contributed to this rise in obesity over the last several decades.
Mm-hmm. Great. Then why do individuals find it so difficult to lose weight and keep it off?
Well, we all, like I said before, we develop these relationships with food where we use food for things that really have nothing at all to do with nutrition. One popular way that people use food is to cope with stress. People use food to soothe themselves, to calm themselves, to reward themselves. And if you think about this, the first time in our life that we express distress when we're babies and we cry, the thing that is brought to us is food, either through the breast or the bottle. So immediately we learn we are in distress, we eat, and then we're calm again. Another reason that people often use food for things that don't have to do with nutrition has to do with when we use food for stimulation, to keep us awake or alert when we're doing something boring, to perk us up. Not uncommon at all to use food to get us through monotonous or boring tasks. And finally, we use food in terms of our habits. So we become very accustomed to eating certain foods, like I said, in certain situations. And then it becomes difficult to unpair those associations when we're trying to eat solely for nutrition and not for some of those other reasons.
Mm-hmm. Great. What are some of the mistakes that people make when they try to lose weight that causes them to later regain the weight back?
Well, I think people often go into weight loss attempts with very unrealistic expectations. And some of the media that's been around in the recent past really promotes fad diets and losing weight in very speedy, dramatic ways. And we know that those ways ultimately don't work because they're not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell my patients that I want you to be eating when you're losing weight in a way that you feel like you could eat for the rest of your life. That means that you're comfortable, you are feeling satiated, and you're feeling energized. So the weight loss period should, it does have some differences as compared to when someone is maintaining their weight, but it shouldn't feel like an unsustainable state.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason that I think people often get into trouble is when they fall into an all-or-nothing kind of thinking. When they have a slip, when they overeat, when they eat something they didn't plan to, they sort of throw their hands up and think all is lost. And really, these slips are just a part of the process, and they should be looked at that as such, as a series of mistakes that you learn from, then you move on. No one overeating episode or one large meal or one even binge episode is going to totally ruin a weight loss attempt. So oftentimes when this happens for people, they get discouraged and give up and then start to regain the weight back. So those are the two biggest mistakes that I see people falling into.
Mm-hmm. Then, Dr. Rickel, what is the single most powerful behavior a person can undertake to achieve long-term weight loss success?
Well, by and large, every study that I know of, studies that are done here at Structure House and studies that are done in the larger field of weight management, tell us that people who self-monitor, specifically referring to keeping track of what they're eating and what they weigh each and every day, tend to be the most successful at losing weight and keeping that weight off. In fact, even when people enroll in research studies to evaluate new weight loss strategies, during the first week of those studies, that people are told to document everything that they eat, but not to change anything, just to get a baseline. And every single time, the people will come back the next week having just been instructed to document without changing. Everyone loses weight that week. There are some things very, very powerful about being extraordinarily mindful of what you're eating, enough so that you can record it later, that really cause you to eat less. So self-monitoring is by far the most powerful thing that a person can do. If someone tells me, asks me, you know, Katie, what's one thing I can do to start a weight loss effort? I will always tell them to just start writing down everything they eat.
Mm-hmm. Then how could I, if I wanted to lose weight, how would I best guide my friends and family to provide support to me?
Yes, this is a very sort of tricky and touchy subject that I work with my patients quite a bit on, because nobody likes to be surrounded by a food police, someone who's watching what they're eating or making comments about what their choices are. So I encourage my patients to tell their friends and family members specifically what they can do to help. And people usually, when they're watching someone struggle, especially when they have a lot of weight to lose, friends and family members of these people are very frightened. So when they see their friend or family member overeating, they tend to panic and say unhelpful things. So if that person can think about specific things that their friend or family member can do, then the friends and family members feel empowered to help. Oftentimes, it's just modeling good behavior. I think the most helpful thing that parents can do in helping their children lose weight is to model healthy eating behavior and exercise and encourage it so that the family has an environment of doing these behaviors. So I really think that the best advice that I can give friends and family members has to be to go to their loved one and ask them what specifically would be helpful.
Great. Then, Dr. Rickel, before we look at your services, products, and how listeners can reach you, is there anything else you would like to say?
Well, I think that it's extraordinarily important to really take a holistic approach. That's why I was pleased when your show wanted to learn more about Structure House, because no one is ever going to be successful losing weight when they're just given a diet and exercise prescription. You really have to look at the person's psychological background, behavioral patterns, spiritual beliefs, and a strength that I think differentiates Structure House from other similar programs is that we look at every aspect of that person. We don't just look at them in terms of a weight loss number. So I think a holistic approach is certainly the way to go here.
Great. Good. Then, Dr. Rickel, will you tell us about products, services, and how the listeners can reach you?
Yes, of course. So Structure House is a residential weight management facility in Durham, North Carolina. And participants come and stay on our campus. We have beautiful apartments that are fully furnished that participants reside in during their time here. And the typical first stay lasts 4 weeks, but people can certainly do shorter or longer stays as fits their schedule. And during that stay, they're exposed to our multidisciplinary approach. They'll be eating a low-calorie, low-salt, low-fat cuisine in our dining room. And we do have a chef on staff here who really takes care to make the food both attractive and very tasty. People are often surprised that they enjoy this lower-calorie food. They have access to our full facility, our full exercise facilities, which includes many, many exercise classes throughout the day, including water classes, and also personal training services. And oftentimes people say that exercising at Structure House has been the first time that they really feel comfortable exercising in public. A lot of people who struggle with their weight feel very self-conscious going to their neighborhood gym. But here at Structure House, in the classes, everyone's in the same boat. Everyone is struggling along together, and that can be a very welcoming approach. Participants also, throughout the day, come to our psychoeducational classes, where we have social workers and clinical psychologists on staff to talk about the things that go on from the neck up, all of the behaviors, all of the emotions, all of the psychological factors that may have contributed to a person's developing this unhealthy relationship with food in the first place. Participants attend support groups. They can do individual therapy while they're here. And we also have a great nursing staff that can both identify medical conditions that may be either contributing or consequences of the person's weight and make the appropriate referrals so people can get, you know, medically taken care of as well. So it's a really comprehensive approach that we offer.
Mm-hmm. What is your website?
Our website is www.structurehouse.com.
Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you a couple questions about diet. What are your thoughts on organic food and vegan diets?
Organic food and vegan diets is not something that we subscribe to exclusively here, in that all of our food is not organic, nor is it vegan. Some of the difficulties that I think often happen when people think about vegan or vegetarian diets, they sometimes confuse them with weight loss diets, and they really have two different goals. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it's very easy to take in quite a few calories, more calories than one's body needs when following a vegan or vegetarian diet.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly if people have those preferences due to moral concerns, then we can accommodate them. Mm-hmm. But that's not something that we promote or suggest here directly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're right about gaining weight, because I went on was put on a vegan diet when I had lung cancer 40 years ago. And I remember that I was afraid I wouldn't get enough protein, so I was eating too much and putting on weight. And recently, I went on a vegan diet again for a heart condition, because the research shows that it's helpful when you have a heart condition. And again, I was putting on weight until I pulled back on the fruit, because, you know, again, I was afraid I wouldn't get enough protein. And so you're very right about that.
Yeah.
And I also,
and there's nothing good, bad, right, wrong about any one kind of eating, but just vegan and vegetarianism is not necessarily for weight loss.
Right, right, right. Well, I thank you very much. This has been very interesting, and I am very happy that you use a holistic approach, because like you, I believe that the holistic approach is the way to go, whether it's weight loss or whether it's preventing illnesses or treating illnesses or what have you. And it seems like more and more medical health people are beginning to move in that direction. So I'm delighted that you're there. So this is great, and I thank you again.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Good. Thank you. My second guest, Dr. Laurel F. Dabney, a physician who wants to live in a world where people with emotional problems are treated with dignity and respect, and not as pharmaceutical experiments or part of an assembly line. As a relationship expert who specializes in professional men with relationship problems, she has been showcased as a regular weekly co-host of the Hampton Roads local radio show, WPTE Relationship 911, featured as a guest on Alice Radio, Chicago, Illinois, highlighted as a regular blogger from Hampton Roads Women's Magazine, and pegged as a regular admissions interviewer at Eastern Virginia Medical School. When she's not devoting time to helping professional men be as successful in their personal lives as they are in their business lives, you can find her slinging paint on canvases in her art studio, slushing down mountains, or hanging with her husband and two boys at their favorite sushi bar. Her first, and quite possibly the world's first, book on the unique difficulties professional men face in long-term relationships is due to hit the shelves later this year. More information is available at www.drldabney.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Dabney, and I look forward to hearing about your work on relationships with professional men. Now, first, how did professional men with relationship problems become your niche?
Well, that was actually somewhat by accident. It wasn't like I started with, you know, I'm going to treat professional men with relationship problems. But I think what happened when I look back, as I've been in practice for 15 years now, so when I look back, I started my practice with not wanting to work with insurance companies. And that, I didn't want to work with them because I would need an extra person, to pay an extra person to stay and deal with all that paperwork. And, well, it turns out it gave the patient more privacy because I didn't have that other person in the office and I wasn't faxing off their personal information to people. And I capitalized on that privacy piece by having a private waiting room, and it's just me and my answering machine, and they also could contact me by text or email. You know, it's quite accessible. So that led to people who were high profile, very successful, would come in, and that's who they want. That's why they wanted to see me. And then the other thing was, because relationships, people with relationship, I mean, I'm talking about long-standing relationship problems, that's a difficult problem to solve, and it takes, you know, typically 1 to 2 years, sort of on the average. And because insurance won't cover that, so here again, it's not taking any insurance, and there are actually some mental health people who think it's untreatable, that also, all of a sudden, they're landing in my office. We didn't have any timetable, and I knew I could help them. So all of a sudden, this, I became the place to go if you had that that problem. So when I was told as a marketing, when I got a marketing person, I expanded, and they said, okay, so now you need a niche. And I said, I don't have a niche. They said, well, take a look and see who you have in your office. And then that's what it turns out. That's who I had.
Well, I'm glad someone has that as their niche, because this is probably a population that does not have a lot of places they can go for specific problems like that.
Right, exactly, where they can go safely for specific problems.
Right. And I'm surprised, though, that insurance doesn't cover that.
Well, insurance doesn't cover a lot, unfortunately. And, you know, they're more into insuring emergencies. It's almost like, well, if you're going to work and you're not going to kill yourself, well, then you don't have a problem in our eyes. But, you know, these men are suffering a great deal, and they feel they can't admit it. They're embarrassed because they've been so successful in their careers that they can't understand why they can't put their relationship in the same routine and be successful with that also.
You focus on therapy instead of medication, and can you tell us why this came about? Because I think it's fantastic, but it's not the norm.
It's not the norm. And I started my training, was in the 90s, when the whole Prozac and all the wannabes were really, you know, just exploded on the marketplace. So the heyday. And we trained first in my residency. The first 2 years was all about medications and emergency and the hospital. It was very, you feel like you're a superstar because everyone wants to talk to you, and these pharmaceutical representatives are bringing you dinner and sending you on trips. And, well, the last 2 years of my residency were in a dark room with secondhand furniture doing therapy, and I didn't know how to do it. But we, you know, had a patient, and we had to sit in there and try to figure it out, and we would talk to a supervisor after every session. So that's how I learned. So I went from the superstar status to no one wanted anything to do with me because I wasn't prescribing medications anymore. But I learned from that several things. One thing is therapy is more rewarding. It doesn't take a lot to prescribe medication. Take less, take more. Take less, take more, will change. Take less, take more, will change. So it wasn't as rewarding. Plus, I started to realize it doesn't take a genius to figure out that although the medications can help, and I don't want to take anything away from that. Medications can help several things, but they don't solve mm-hmm. much. Mm-hmm. They have side effects. They all stop working, and those slick ads don't tell you that. It's your body somehow adjusts to them, and they wear off after mm-hmm. a while.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep changing. Plus, people underestimate the commitment. I mean, let's say someone comes in their early 30s, and okay, here's a medication you have to take twice a day for the rest of your life. That gets old.
Right.
It gets old fast.
Right.
So there's that. And then what I was noticing is that, okay, every time the drug rep came, it was a new, let's say for depression, it was a new chemical they were focusing on in the brain. They were saying it's a chemical problem in the brain. Oh, it's serotonin. Well, next thing you know, well, maybe it's norepinephrine, or maybe it's a dopamine. So it's like if you keep targeting these different chemicals, then clearly you don't know which one is causing depression. When I would say, because it's not a chemical problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they keep comparing it to insulin for diabetes. But if you look at all medications for diabetes, they all attack insulin.
Mm-hmm.
They're not saying it's something else or something else. You know, so they understand that. So there's this undercurrent of they really don't understand it. I would say that really isn't always certainly or totally a chemical problem.
Right, right.
So that's how I got more into therapy, and I basically can cure people without any side effects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you use nutrition as part of your therapeutic approach?
All those, I don't know, para mental health, parapsychiatric mm-hmm. modalities like meditation and nutrition mm-hmm. and exercise, they all come into play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a great thing about therapy is it's so individually based. Prozac is, they just make one pill for everybody,
right,
you know, but
right.
therapy is different with every person. So we definitely bring up everything. I mean, mm-hmm. it depends on the person, but exercise is actually more common to talk about than nutrition. Sometimes weight issues become a part of the therapy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I interviewed a psychiatrist who is very much into epigenetics and
right.
the influence of the mind on the body and how we can influence our DNA and all. And he told me that about 2% of all schizophrenics that never could be treated before can now be treated with changes in nutrition. And they do a lot of testing, nutritional testing, to see what biological chemicals are needed in the body.
I think this green movement, for lack of a better phrase, I'm not sure that's the right terminology, mm-hmm. but the whole everybody trying to be less chemical dependent has mm-hmm. helped my practice a lot. And I think it's
yeah.
helped people a lot
mm-hmm.
because they are looking at, I have a soon-to-be daughter-in-law who mm-hmm. Has had abdominal problems for a long time. Well, she found out she's gluten sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so 20 years ago, they would have just kept putting her through a battery test and
right.
medication. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, this whole, it's very interesting how people are looking now at nutrition and chemicals, and they're thinking twice now about, do I really want to ingest that?
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at the labels on food. You know, all these chemicals are in these crackers. Mm-hmm. Why would I ingest those? So
right.
I think it's a great, it's nice for me to see the pendulum switching from we can solve it with a pill to let's think twice about what we put in our bodies.
Right. I think that's great, too. I developed a gluten sensitivity about mm-hmm. 6 months ago, and mm-hmm. I have always tried to be very careful. I eat organic or locally grown. I, you know, eat primarily fruit, vegetables, grains, and nuts. And I developed gluten sensitivity. And
right.
I figured out that I think for me, it's probably the genetically modified foods. And the reason I decided that is because my friends in Germany send me a box of German cookies every year for Christmas. And I don't eat a lot of sweets, but maybe once a month I want something, and the German cookies aren't as sweet as the American. And so I pulled out a cookie and I ate it, and I pulled out a second cookie and ate it, and I thought, that's probably got wheat in it. And I looked, and sure enough, it did. But I had no reaction to it. And since then, I've had no reaction to the wheat in the German cookies. And see, they don't have genetically modified foods. So I suspect that it has to do with nutrition and very likely genetically modified foods.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I'll have to tell my son's girlfriend about that.
Well, suggest that she try some German sweets, because I don't know where you can get them locally. I know that the World Market has them at Christmas time, and they may have some left over from Christmas, but I don't know where you can get them other than at Christmas time.
Right.
Unless you have contacts in Germany or can order them through the internet. But it's worth a try.
Yes, it is. It would be very interesting to see, just as a little experiment.
Mm-hmm. Then, Dr. Dabney, what are trends in mental health today, and how do you address those trends?
Well, I think we sort of touched on that already with this trend of feeling that it's not, there's no quick fix. They're not falling. People aren't falling for that anymore. They're a little bit more suspicious, may not be the best word, but they're a little bit more inquisitive about what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I find very few people come in and they say, I just want medication and nothing else. If they want medication, they typically want therapy with it, which I think is great. So they just are more curious, and I think that's in part because the scare or the fear of mental health is, I think, hopefully slowing down or starting to fade a bit. When I first started my practice 15 years ago, people were much more sensitive about, you know, sort of clandestine coming in. I don't want anybody to know. And although people want their privacy, it's more of a normal doctor-patient privacy than a whole, I feel embarrassed that I have an emotional problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I think organizations like NAMI and all kinds of mental health organizations have done a great job at making it more acceptable that you have an emotional problem and that you go get help for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great trend. Plus this trend of people, you know what the most common major in all the universities almost across the country is? Psychology. So you get these people who are fascinated with psychology, yet as adults, they're afraid to go even near a psychiatrist or psychologist. And I think now these people who are more interested are starting to like, well, I want to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, less medications, more about therapy, less embarrassed. All good things.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think the more holistic approach is a trend, or are you still out there pretty much by yourself?
I am the only female psychiatrist who does both therapy and medications, who does any therapy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
isn't that sad?
It is sad, and there's a lot at play there. In part, the insurance companies, you know, don't pay, so people are catering to that, and they get more medication. They get more income if they just go back to back with medications. So, I'm sensitive to that. Other doctors, you know, want to keep their income up. We come out of medical school with a huge, you know, $100,000 debt on average. But at the same time, I just couldn't sell my soul like that.
Right.
Do that.
It's not
income. And actually, I'm making more doing it this way than my colleagues who are doing medication only. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the public are beginning to realize what is good medicine and what isn't. And they're wanting more than what they have gotten in the past.
That's exactly right. And they're realizing that. And they're also getting more comfortable about asking questions. Remember in the day, it was you went to the doctor, did whatever he said. And now they're like, now, wait a minute, I have a few questions, you know, for you. So they're a little bit more on guard about. Not every doctor is perfect. I mean, we're people too, and you know they're not as willing to succumb to the doctor in town.
Then, Dr. Dabney, what is the most common relationship problem you see among the professional men, and how do you deal with it?
The most common thing I see is trouble with, when I say intimacy, I'm talking about long-standing closeness. That is even talking about, okay, I'm upset or I'm angry, mm-hmm. or I need something. They can't even say that. So that's this long-standing, you know, these men who are very successful often come from a difficult childhood. And that difficulty, they turn into a competition, and that's why they succeed. But that you learn how to get close with your first relationship is when you're born, and you have that closeness with your mom and then mm-hmm. your dad, and you're learning that right away. And if that somehow didn't go well, you don't learn how to do that closeness. Well, then they take that anger that's sort of pent up there, and they excel at sports and they excel at work. But then when they get to the pinnacle of their work, they look around and like, I don't have anybody close to me. And then they can't do that because that's going to take going through those old relationships and what happened there, going through the problems that were caused there, and learning how to get close to the therapist.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you recreate a closeness in therapies that they can then use to, you know, bounce off of and do it out in their private life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like putting their closeness in under a microscope, their relationships under a microscope. So what happens with me in session? And that's why the more they come in, the better it is. And therefore, that's why insurance doesn't like it, too.
Mm-hmm.
The more they come in, the more we can say, okay, so, you know, you didn't show up yesterday. You didn't call. What was going on there? And then they start saying, well, I was embarrassed because I did X and I didn't want to tell you. Okay, then mm-hmm. we say, well, you know, that's what you're supposed to tell me. So what kept you from telling me is there's that closeness, not able to open up mm-hmm. and talk mm-hmm. about something.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to look at it under a microscope, and that closeness is that's what I see the most of, and that is the one thing it's probably the most difficult thing we treat in mental health, and that's why a lot of people have said it's incurable, which is wrong. It just takes a
mm-hmm.
long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because kids learn it, you know, in infancy, and then again in adolescence when you're, you know, going back and forth with your parents and fighting
mm-hmm.
them on,
mm-hmm.
you're trying to get your own identity. That's another time when closeness is learned and dealt with. And, you know, there's just some families where that doesn't work out very well.
Mm-hmm. And can you generalize as to about how long this takes, or does it vary a lot by individual?
It varies by how bad it is. So I'll have a married patient who, let's just say, had an affair, but
mm-hmm.
feels it wasn't long, it was maybe a one-night thing, and has some remorse, comes in, and we work on that. Well, their ability to handle intimacy, if they've been married for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
is pretty good. They broke the intimacy they didn't address what was the problem with their wife verbally. They went out and acted it out, we would say.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little flaw there in the closeness, but not as bad as I have physicians who have never been married or
mm-hmm.
ever in a longer than, you know, 3 month relationship. So the first example would take probably 6 months to, you know, 6 months
mm-hmm.
to 8 months to a year. The other example where they've never been in a long standing intimate relationship, that'd be about 10 years.
Oh.
Yeah.
And they must get discouraged then.
Some do. Some, you know, it's like when they realize they're getting a relationship with me, and because it's not like they don't get any better till the 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting
mm-hmm.
better along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And they get a little, I don't know if addicted isn't the right word, but they get kind of excited about it. It's the first time they've had any hope.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, okay, they can now see and understand and comprehend what the problem is. So there's a huge relief in that for them.
Oh.
They, you know, but before they come see me, they can't, they just, it's failed relationship after failed relationship after failed. They see their dreams of having a wife and child go out the window, and now there's hope. So it becomes, you know, it's not fun necessarily,
mm-hmm.
but it's very rewarding,
mm-hmm.
very rewarding. Because they're making these changes all along the way, and they can see how it's leading up to. I have, you know, a patient now who's, I'm going to disguise it a little bit with the details, but basically
mm-hmm.
He's a lawyer with his own practice, and 10 years now has been in treatment with me and had never had anything longer than 3 months, is now engaged, living
mm-hmm.
with his fiance, and they are trying to have a baby and
wonderful.
Plans to get married. So
mm-hmm.
That's a huge change for
mm-hmm.
him.
Right, right. What would you tell someone who had a fear of going to a mental health professional?
Right. Well, we've talked about how some of that has changed. That fear has seemed to have died down a bit, so that's good. But there are still some people who have misperception
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
mental health. A lot of people, and this is really interesting to me because I'm not sure where it comes from, feel that they're going to be criticized by me. You know, they're going to come in and they do this kind of confession. They're almost cowering, going, oh, mm-hmm. and I did this. And they think, you know, because I'm a woman or I'm a wife, that I'm going to, you know, how mm-hmm. could you do that? I don't know. They're expecting a reaction that, you know, obviously doesn't come. So I try to tell people to realize that we're not here to criticize. It's also a lot of embarrassment there. If they're not thinking I'm going to chastise them, they think I'm going to be, you know, weirded out or upset
mm-hmm.
by something. And I try to tell people that we're scientists. We look at any problem, and you don't think weird or what. You think, oh, what is going on here? I want to find out. I get very curious. So I try to tell people we're not here to judge you or chastise you. And then the other thing which speaks to this closeness problem is they have this fear that they fear closeness means taking over. So they think, okay, we're going to work like 2 times a week for, you know, 6 months to a year. They hear that as, okay, you're going to sit there and tell me what books to read and when to read them and how fast I should go and what to do, what to say, you know. So I try to tell them in advance, not a done-for-you program. I'm not mm-hmm. going to lay out a map and you're going to follow it. I'm going to help you figure it out. But you're going to be making that map, and I'm going to be, you know, basically
mm-hmm.
guiding you. So it's not taking somebody over. It's not chastising. It's not humiliating anybody. I also try to tell people, not be afraid to shop around. It's a very personal. Your relationship with a therapist is very personal.
Mm-hmm.
And we do not take offense if you say, look, this doesn't work for me, or something about you doesn't work for me. We appreciate that. We'd rather you go find someone, you know, not waste your time or ours
mm-hmm.
with a fit that isn't there. Some people think I have to tell people every time when they come in for the first session, it's just the first session. It's assessment. We haven't started therapy. You're not committed to
mm-hmm.
2 years of twice a week therapy with me just because you come into my office. You come in for the first time and we talk, and then you make a decision about how often. You have a say. The patient has a say. This is really the only say. People say, well, so am I done? Do you think I'm finished? I'm like, well, what do you think? You know, it's not about whether I think you're done. I could work with you forever. You know, there's always something to look at and explore,
right.
but
mm-hmm.
you have to feel like you're ready to do this yourself, or you've had enough, or whatever it is. So I always tell people to say, be very careful. You go ahead and shop around for different therapists, see which is the best fit, and don't be afraid to say, look, this isn't working for me, or this isn't quite right. Can we do it this way? You know, to be in charge.
Mm-hmm. Is that separation difficult?
It is. It's painful. It's like any other. We rarely have, if you think about it, we rarely
mm-hmm.
have a chance to say goodbye in a relationship
mm-hmm.
when a relationship ends. So when we have that goodbye, it's very poignant. It's a mixture because I'm so proud of them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so rewarding to see that they have obtained all their goals, and they're these, you know, successful people both in business and in their personal lives. And
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of glad to see them go in that way. But at the same time, it's hard because I get close
mm-hmm.
to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they get close to you.
Yes, it's a pseudo-closeness because
mm-hmm.
I'm not sharing anything. But yes, there is
mm-hmm.
this is an
right.
emotional impact there,
right.
yes.
Right, right. Well, they've shared a lot with you, and I think when you share something with other people, there is a closeness there. You wouldn't have shared it in the first place if there wasn't, and you build onto that, am I right?
That's exactly right. They build on it, and they see that, okay, I'm close with Dr. Downey, but she's not taking me over,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. she's not kicking me out. So they can start practicing that whole, okay, a safe place to go over problems with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they start realizing, okay, Dr. Dabney's safe, well, then maybe this person is safe out here, and they start going out and practicing that kind of closeness with other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You didn't learn all of this in school, did you? I think that some of it, you were that kind of a person, but I think also you have learned a lot that you didn't learn in school. Just from what I hear, you're a person that has learned a lot on your own and has integrated a lot into your own life.
Well, I try to tell my patients that they teach me. They're the greatest teachers I have because, mm-hmm. I get so much from each person. I learn a little bit more mm-hmm. about what these type of people struggle with. Mm-hmm. As my father would say, the school of hard knocks. But mm-hmm. I was fortunate to be at EV. I actually went to EVMS in my residency. We were fortunate enough to have these wonderful supervisors. So I learned the type of therapy I do is mm-hmm. analytic therapy. And a lot of programs, that's how influential the pharmaceutical companies are. A lot of programs have cut out therapy.
Oh.
Yeah, or just reduced it to very, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. a few months. But I had 2 years of learning all the different types, and, they split it in half, the medication part and then the therapy part. So mm-hmm. I really am appreciative to my program for mm-hmm. not going with the trend,
mm-hmm.
but teaching us everything, and then I got to then choose what worked for me, which was great.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. I had no idea that EVMS had that type of a program, but that's...
They actually hire, I don't know how well known this is, but they actually hire someone to come in. They're paid to have someone come in to teach us mm-hmm. from the community. So he's not just a teacher, he's actually doing this work.
Oh, uh-huh. Great.
He comes in and teaches us for 2 years, then we have... We learn different kinds of therapy from other people, too, and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Really appreciative of that.
Mm-hmm. Then, Dr. Dabney, is there anything else you'd like to say before we look at your services and products and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, I just want to thank you for keeping alternative medicine or holistic medicine or ideas, in the forefront of the population. I do feel it's it takes each individual person to make mm-hmm. a groundswell mm-hmm. to make noise about
right.
it. And I think it's long overdue, so I'm just so grateful that you gave me this opportunity and that you're out there spreading the word on your show and in other ways.
Great. Good. Thank you. Now then, would you tell us about your services and any products you have and how the listeners can reach you?
Sure. Probably the best way to see my products and to reach me and learn about me is through my website,
mm-hmm.
which is drldabney.com. So that's drldabney.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I try to make that very informative. It isn't just, my phone number and my address, but it tells a lot about my practice. I do have an associate now who joined my practice earlier last year, and talks about her as well. She does life coaching, and it talks about the difference between life coaching and therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Talks about my views on medication, and also on there's a little e-book that people can download totally free, and it talks a lot about the successful men, and there's women too who mm-hmm. have trouble with intimacy, with mm-hmm. long-standing relationships, and that people have been giving me feedback that's been very helpful. I tried to take all the things I learned in therapy with my patients and put it in that little ebook there.
Mm-hmm. Do people need to come to you, or are you able to do interviews and work over Skype, or how do you function?
Yep, I do. I do Skype sessions and I do phone sessions. I prefer Skype mm-hmm. now that I've done both for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, definitely, I do that. People also can come in to see me just for, like I was telling you earlier, just mm-hmm. for an evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they come in to work, just want to work out one problem. They're in town for 2 weeks and want mm-hmm. to work on something,
mm-hmm.
try to be as flexible as I can.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's great that you can work through Skype because that gives more people the opportunity to utilize your services.
and to continue services. Some people, I've had some patients move, especially business people, and we've been able to continue. So that's really great.
Good. Well, I thank you very much. This has been very interesting, and it's something I'm interested in, but have not had someone speak about this previously. My doctorate is in mental health, and so my advisor was a psychiatrist, Paul Lemkow. I don't know if you've ever heard that name, but he was considered the father of mental health in public health. And so his work primarily was on how to prevent mental disorders in populations. And so he did lots of research in Baltimore, Maryland, because I was at Hopkins, but also in other countries. And Yugoslavia was one place where he did a lot of research. So
I'll look him up. Very interesting.
Yeah, he was a very humanistic person also. I learned a lot from him, and he was one of the two people that have most influenced my career and my life, you know. So he was a great person to have as my advisor through, you know, both the master's and doctoral program.
Well, great. It was so great. I'm so glad you found me.
Right. I am too. Right. And
it was great to connect with you.
Right. So I thank you again, Dr. Dabney. It's been great, and I will be in touch again.
Okay, I'm so glad to hear that, and congratulations on all your successes.
Thank you. I thank you for joining me today. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the previous shows for the last 6 years under the blog. You'll find information on books that I have written, ebooks, and soft cover books. On my second website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find most of the shows that I have been interviewed on to discuss the natural interventions that I used when I had lung cancer 40 years ago. You will also find that book for sale if interested. I also invite you to join me on Facebook under my name or under Beat Lung Cancer or Holistic Health Show. I invite you to join me on LinkedIn under my name, Carl Helvey. And I also invite you to join me on Twitter under Holist Health Show. I hope you have a great week, and I look forward to seeing you again next time. I'm Dr. Carl O. Helvey, your host.